England to World Cup victory in 2003. And this is what he wrote. "It confused the hell out of me. Any time that you work hard for something, when you invest a great deal of yourself in your ambitions and you succeed, there is room for the expectation that the fulfillment and happiness will always be with you from that moment on. But I sat in the changing room in Sydney after that epic battle until pretty much everyone had left. I didn't want to wave goodbye because I didn't want to let go of the moment and give in to its inevitable passing. I'd already begun to feel the elation slipping away during the lap of honour around the field. I couldn't believe that all the effort was losing its worth so soon. I'd just achieved my greatest ambition and it felt a bit empty." And then I came across this week an article in Men's Health this month. I know I don't look like the sort of guy who would read Men's Health, but there you go. It must have been somebody else's. And this article followed the sexual adventures of a guy, the journalist Alex Harris, as he, I quote, "went under the covers to reveal the passions and paranoias driving the UK's sex party scene." Basically, he went and fully engaged in three orgies. And this is what he says. "I leave the party with my tie hanging from my back pocket, the same tie that has been at the feet of two girls in as many hours, and I'm grinning with what I can only imagine is an elation that comes from pushing my own boundaries. A few hours later, though, in a very hot shower, with the alcohol wearing off, my elation subsides. One of the girls I had sex with was attractive, only one, but I knew nothing about her. I can't even remember the second one's name. The moment was what those dreams are made of. But with sobriety and hindsight comes the realization that I may simply have been caught up in the moment." Both of these men experienced many people's, especially many men's, hopes and dreams. Yet they found them to be empty of any lasting fulfillment. And I want to suggest to you today that to a greater or lesser degree, their experiences are really no different from any of ours. That you and I really do live in and experience an era of discontent. And that if we were to sit down and analyse it for long enough, we would find that we're desperately trying to find something that will fill an emptiness that we all feel, that will give us meaning and purpose and contentment. We hide and suppress the feeling pretty well, don't we? We don't want other people to know that actually underneath the surface we're discontent. But if we're honest enough about it to ourselves, all of us will find that we have an innate natural instinct that tells us all is not as it should be. So although it may not be rugby or sexual conquests, we end up chasing all sorts of things to make it right, don't we? To fill the hole. Better jobs, more respect, greater success, good relationships, strong finances, perfect children, great cars, expensive gadgets, pretty shoes, designer clothes, smaller tummies, bigger boobs. You see, actually, we end up believing the 500 adverts that we see each day that tell us that with their products, be it mortgages, makeup, men or Mercedes, we'll be happy, fulfilled, complete. And so we go on and we shop until we drop. But the truth is, and like Johnny and Alex, we've all experienced it, haven't we? The promised fulfillment never actually comes. Or if it does come, it never lasts. So you get a single girl who thinks everything will be okay when she's married, but finds that 7 years into her marriage she was better off single. Or there's the guy who thinks that everything will be okay when he gets that new car, and he finds that he feels no more satisfied in his Porsche than when he was driving his 2CV. He can get places a bit quicker, people gawp as he drives past, but as he's driving he still feels that need, that innate natural desire to be contented. And so we go on chasing other things. The girl, she decides, well, she's married the wrong man. Actually, she should have married the man across the road. So that would have made things right. Or the guy, he just needs new alloy wheels for his car. That's the problem. And we keep on searching. Well, today I want to ask you to consider this. If we keep going on with that cycle, then we'll never fill the hole that we're experiencing. We'll always remain discontent. And I'll tell you why I say that, because the Bible tells us that we're looking for contentment, satisfaction, in the wrong place or the wrong things. You see, according to the Bible, that innate sense that things aren't as good as they should be or could be is a good instinct, because actually it tells us that we're not living as we were created to live. Very simply, you and I were created, made, to relate with our Maker, God. The problem is, we don't, do we? In fact, most of the time we go out and just simply live without Him. Most of the time we live our lives without a second thought to God. We live by our rules, our morals, our wisdom. We turn our backs and reject God. And what God says in response is fine. If you don't want me, go live without me. I'm not going to force myself upon you. And that is ultimately, at its core, why we're discontent. Why we feel the sense that something isn't as it should be. You see, we're made for a relationship with God, but that relationship is broken. Life isn't as it should be. As Tim said earlier, we wanted to talk about Jesus tonight. What's all this got to do with Jesus? Well, there was one time when Jesus came across a woman by the side of a well. And she was clearly a discontent woman. She had had five husbands. She was currently living with her lover. She was doing what we've seen we all do. She was trying to find fulfillment in stuff and people and relationships and sex. And because they're beside a well, Jesus uses the imagery of thirst to depict her discontent. And he says to her as he stands by the well, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water I will give him will never be thirsty again." In other words, Jesus says, "I'm here to fill that hole that you can't fill, however much you keep trying. You'll just keep becoming thirsty again. I'm here to quench your thirst." And then later on, when Jesus is talking to a bunch of religious leaders, he says, "I've come that those who put their trust in me may have life and have it abundantly." Again, in other words, I've come in order that people may experience life as it was meant to be. I've come to reconcile people with God, to put right that innate sense that something isn't right. And how does he do that? Well, as we follow on the story of Jesus, we come to the part of the story that we're going to be remembering next week at Easter time, his crucifixion and resurrection. As Jesus is on the cross, about to die, one of the last things he says is, "I thirst." You see, what's happening as Jesus dies is that he's taking upon himself the punishment and consequences of your and my rejection of God. The punishment and consequences we deserve. So he's thirsty on the cross, not because he needs water, physical water, but because he's experiencing being cut off from God his Father. As Jesus dies, he actually experiences our deep discontent. But that means for us that his death has paved our way back to relationship with God. You see, if our punishment for rejecting God has been served, then as we trust in Jesus' death, the path is made clear for us again to relate with God. We can start living once more as we were created to live, with God as God. We know who we are, we have purpose and meaning. We can know God and live as he would have us live, as we relate properly and personally with him. Our thirst is quenched. But then there's more than that. You see, Jesus rose from the dead 3 days later. That's what we celebrate on Easter Sunday. He overcame death, proving that he himself is God, that he really does have the power to give life and life abundantly. And his promise to those who trust him, who drink the thirst quenching water on offer, is that they too will overcome death. That there's an eternity in heaven where true deep contentment will be found. Where we'll never go thirsty again. Whereas we live in the presence of God forever in friendship with him. So I'm going to finish now. I just want to ask you, are you thirsty? Deep down, when you reflect on yourself, on your own life, are you thirsty? Does what I've said ring true? Well, if it does, let me encourage you, quench your thirst in Jesus. That sounds so cheesy and twee and Christian. I'm really aware of that. But actually, he really is the only thirst quencher. As we begin friendship with Jesus, we start a new friendship with God. Drink tonight. Trust tonight in his death, in his resurrection. Start living with Jesus as God. And enjoy the contentment, the life, the satisfaction that he brings. Thanks very much for listening.